Ladies and gentlemen, that too was not electronically enhanced.
Or electronically enchanted.
Oh, yeah.
We just heard Ariel by our guest today, Dean Rosenthal, who's currently scratching Lily, who's waiting to do some more hawking.
Yeah, Lily, you going to hawk for us here?
Okay.
So let's talk about, rather than chronology, let's talk about your point of view as a composer. What do you try to do? I mean, who... audience, yourself, others, why? There are lots of composers. I mean, why is there one more needed whose name is Dean Rosenthal?
Or Rosencrantz.
Or, yes. Gildenthal. Yes.
I don't know if there's a good answer to that question, but I think that the, you know, when I was writing most of those pieces, which was, you know, they were before 2003, it was just kind of a compelling factor for me. Okay. This is music I need to write. At one point, I it seemed like I had gotten, there was some level of competence there when I was writing electronic music, but I wasn't excited about it because it wasn't being written for performers, just real people, and or, you know, however you want to think of that. I'm not sure. You could press a play button, too. But so the instrumental stuff was... It had a lot to do, I guess, with memory at the time and with different life experiences. I think, you know, reasons why composers compose. But after 2003 or 2002...
Start talking about philosophy and look at what happens.
Wow. Yeah, there you go.
We'll sample that later.
Yes, absolutely. We have to do some more bestos.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So I stopped writing music around 2003 because I had...
Oh, right, there was that six-year gap.
There was a six-year gap. I had a breakdown, several of them. I was hospitalized a couple times, five to be exact, and... It was a real, those were just experiences. But I had stopped writing music because I felt like I couldn't put anything together at the time. And and since that time, in the last two or three years, things have changed. 2 years, 1 year, and I found myself getting back into composition, but from a whole new angle, from an instrumental point of view, where I've chosen to look at music through the lens of mathematics, and that's become very important to me. So now I look at writing music as it's sort of like an historical necessity to sort of put out these works that are somehow transparent. They can reflect music as the image of number, or maybe there's some sort of pure kind of transparent mapping of different rhythms and tones, and that somehow it's not related to a serial or whatever else is out there. There's a lot of different pieces that might be written transparently, but for me it would have been and would be sorting out different numerical sequences and rational problems, and in some cases, historically relevant mathematical questions that haven't been answered yet.
Would either underpinnings or castles and arias be representation of that?
Underpinnings, which is a much older piece, kind of jumps into that. I wrote that in 1999 after, and it could have been anything, but I had gone to New York to visit a friend, and they had a retrospective of the American painter Jasper Johns, the great American painter Jasper Johns, at the Museum of Modern Art, and I saw one of his paintings that was, it was sort of a number series, and I was, and I decided, okay, can I apply this? How can I make this into music? And so I did my best to sort of assign different values to different numerical values and create some sort of an orchestration where what you would hear would be what you could see. And in performance, it's you don't hear it so much on a recording, but it's you get a lot of beating tones and just overlaps, harmonics that just really fry, and it's very cool to check out. And I think the recording presents, it's kind of a different sense of it, where you can hear different melodies going up and maybe going down, and there's a lot of chromatic, just sort of. It can be frustrating, even.
Well, it's an interesting recording. It's about 6 minutes, and you'll hear this sort of chromatic rise take place in it. My first thought was that somewhere Jim Tenney had sneaked in the door and influenced this piece. It's very interesting because it has this sort of spiral rising sound, like Foran Rising, right. which is 40 years before this. Also, if you listen to this piece at 10 times normal speed, it also presents a very interesting picture. So I encourage our listening audience to play it, play the show both at normal speed and this particular section at about 10 times.
Can you do that with a cassette?
Cassette?
Yes.
Hmm.
You mean
reel
to reel?
That's an analog technology.
Anna who?
Yes. Dean Rosenthal's our guest here on Calvus and Damien in the house. Here is Underpinnings. home and you listen to your own piece at about 10 times normal speed,
you'll be stunned.
You'll be stunned by the shape of the piece. It just does this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really quite.
Yeah, that's a great insight.
Not changing pitch at normal pitch, but at 10 times normal speed.
Yeah, that's right. You can do that these days. It's slow motion sound.
Doing that to us again. Yeah, hear that.
So this piece actually. So this was a sort of a New York time when you were creating this piece.
Oh no!
Was this before or after Prague?
Yeah, sorry. No. But we have an audience who just was passing through, and now she's leaving. You are Lily.
Oh, is Lily talking?
We hope so.
We're in a house full of wonders here. We also have Jody Diamond, who's coughing through, and upstairs on the phone, that sort of in the background, you hear a little patter of Larry Polanski on the phone. It's a great place here. And on the other end of we won't.
Mm. But she was...
she can jump in at any time.
Because she is supposed to comment upon there was a reference to this Dean person sometimes performing in the nudeness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm not the first and I won't be the last, but it's something that, I don't know, it's a little embarrassing, I guess, but I find it healthy to sort of lounge around and just get on the piano stool and play some music without wearing anything.
This is
really exciting.
This is both
very
in concert and also.
Yeah, I'm working towards the concert performance pieces, but that hasn't that hasn't happened yet.
The Charlotte Mormon School, is that correct?
Maybe. That's a whole different generation.
Two different generations. Would you like to join us? You can talk about this part of it. Very quiet. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, about this. You're supposed to comment on the nude performing. Introduce yourself.
Unsanitary.
I'm Karen. I'm Dean's wife. Yeah.
And you think the performing is unsanitary in the nude? Is there something particularly unsanitary about it?
Or is it startling? I don't know.
Well, some days, maybe. You'll come downstairs, there'll just be some nude guy at the...
It's more occasional. Yeah. So it's unusual and...
Really?
Yeah.
Very
okay.
Exciting.
More
for both of us, I think.
I suppose
that's a thrill.
You'll have to do it more.
Mm.
Where were we? Oh, we were actually asking you before Jody came through about whether that was written, whether Underpinnings was written before or after your Prague period. Prague period.
Prague period. The Prague years.
As opposed to Prague Feek.
I almost... Yeah.
Oh. Never mind.
I'm not sure. I would have to think about that. Is that... Or should I take the time?
No, that's all right. We were just, there's...
Chronology is very important.
Sometimes influences are very much not seen for considerable amount of time until
it was probably
time has
before.
Passed.
Yeah.
So just curious about whether that's part of it. Let's turn to something long.
Sounds great.
Yeah, songs from the Japanese.
Well,
this is a very ethereal kind of a piece.
Yeah. At one point, pretty much everyone else, I went through a J.D. Salinger phase, and I don't know, some people never stop, and I still love those books and those short stories they'd written. And if you're out there listening in Cornish, New Hampshire, thanks a lot, and I owe you a debt. In his books, he had constantly referenced a lot of Japanese and Eastern poetry and thought, so I looked up he footnotes things, but at any rate, I looked up a lot of these books and poems and found that they kind of stuck. And so I found some really neat translations by the American poet Kenneth Rexroth, and I found somehow they were just the right space. My grandfather had died. This was in 1999. As he passed away, I found that I was kind of in this mourning period. He and I were very close. And the sort of the brevity, these weren't haiku or anything like that, these were more sophisticated forms, And I found sort of a solace in that. And what started as one or two ended up growing into 20, 30, and it's kind of an ongoing piece, really, where it just keeps expanding. The tunes are very, very short, and they're kind of written with this sort of... I had picked out the letters and dedicatees' names. I ended up writing little tunes and now putting them to music for many just different inspirations and people, family members, others that I had known and do know. And I had taken notes from their names. Let's say if we were thinking of Calvos, maybe we would take an A. And these days I might try to map, every letter onto a melody. But at the time it would have been A, or Dennis Bathory Kits. Maybe we would have D, E, and then we would have B, A, and
yeah,
it goes
all
on.
And then the TZ.
So that's right. So we could sing that, or you could press play, or we could do both. I don't know. There's a note or two for, to listen to. But that might come across if you listen to the music closely.
It seems, though, that this music is not contrived in any way. In other words, there's a lot of attempt at creating music that has a sort of mapping basis, and right away this piece is, that is not through driven by some other force.
I think that's true of pretty much everything that I've written as a grown man, and for me the structure is somehow completely essential. It's almost as a... I always say to myself that if you don't make... It's like building a house, and if you don't build a good frame or something like this, then it will just fall down 5 years later. So you create some kind of a structure, and I think what you meant is contrived is that it's not coming from some sort of creative wellspring. I'm sad now, so I'm going to write sad music. But
No, that's not what I meant. rather, some people will take the structure or the algorithm or whatever method they're using and stop. This does not sound like it was. That was the sort of the end of the piece. That rather you massaged it significantly as you composed it to turn it into a kind of a listenable shape, maybe as a kind of a way of saying.
Okay. I see my wife nodding at me. I think I don't remember where the rhythms came from, and I think that's what you refer to, because that's what kind of pulls the music out of it. And that probably has the sense of where it breathes. There's some sort of organic, life to it, let's hope. And that's, I don't know, it just in general, it's a philosophy. I think music can't be cold and dry. And even, when I talked of some kind of, transparency, there's just no way it has to live.
Let's hear it. This is, who's the performers in this, by the way?
Good question. There's a singer soprano named Sandy Hammond in Boston, and there was a student at the New England Conservatory whom I recruited named Svetlana Soneva, who is out there somewhere playing incredible music on her violin, and they graciously recorded it at a concert Payne Hall at Harvard University in 2000 or 2001. I've lost track of that day.
Here it is. Our guest today on Calvus and Damien
in the house
is Dean Rosenthal. Here are the songs from the Japanese.
I walked in the palace garden. No trace remains. Thank you.
We're back. We're back. Songs from the Japanese by Dean Rosenthal. We see, I think, and as we're listening, a distinct development of your work, and it seems to me that from what you've said, that this 1999 was a turning point. Was it?
Absolutely. At that point, I stopped writing electronic music and I started writing instrumental music, and that was the shift. And
but more than that, your instrumental music does not sound like electronic music. A lot of people have made that transition and sort of match their instrumental writing to their electronic writing.
Oh, well, not for me, but I thought that what I needed to do was to somehow concentrate on creating a good structure but a sounding music, and I think in the electronic music, but in 1999, what may have been the sort of breakthrough piece for me was a piece named Underpinnings that we had already heard,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I think that structure and the songs from the Japanese maybe exemplify this kind of break for me. It was a different, somehow, there was a click in my head, and I thought to myself, no, this has to be a direction that I take now.
So here we are 10 years from 1999. What are you doing now?
I've started to write again in the last year or two, and it turned out that I had the opportunity and the good fortune to have come across other composers who had the same idea long before me, and some still with me. And I try to work on that. I find myself these days just trying to sketch a lot and experiment before I continue to make new pieces. And I find now, because there were so many years where I was incapacitated, and I had horrible drug problems and I was nearly homeless many times and just out of my mind, really, and I forgot who I was and am as a composer. So today I'm learning more, or just coming back to that where and who what I do now. So that keeps me plenty busy, believe it or not, and it's great.
Do you have a piece of a? Why not? What are you saying? We don't.
Well, there's this new book of rounds by Larry Polanski. He's been collecting
right.
them for a while. There's a round by Dean Rosenthal.
Oh, wonderful!
You want to do it?
I don't know. Do I?
I don't either. Do you?
Ask someone else.
Do we want to do this round?
We could try it. I don't see why not.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to try this round by Dean Rosenthal. And let's see, this has got many beats. It's hard to see from here.
Has that near? As we near?
We
it is.
Near.
Yeah. This is a self-similar melody, for example. But used to a lot of rest. And this may not work. I don't know. We tried this. We sang it last night, which is exciting, but is maybe a little hard to put it together.
All right, you lead. You take two or three.
I'll take two.
Okay.
So, who wants to?
Your lead.
You want to start there.
Wait,
choose
is that a
pitch? Choose some pitch that comes close enough for our voices.
Our gaze is close. Us.
Our gaze is close.
Close.
Hey, wait. Choose the same. You got to choose his rhythm. He got rest in there.
So did I.
Yeah.
Try again.
He's taking two beats on that first note.
Oh, he is?
Did I?
Yeah.
No.
You don't want two beats? Oh, now you do one. Okay, see. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
I see. This isn't. Yes. Our gaze is
you can. You don't have to do that.
Our gaze is
close,
close,
us.
Our gaze is
close,
close, us.
Our
planet is
close,
our room. Our gaze is close,
close,
us.
Our gaze is close.
my goodness, we're having good trouble here. Why are we having trouble here?
It's just a different number of beats in the in that last section. So it starts to shift it.
I see.
Yes, it's seven, and then there's six, and then there's eight.
Hmm. I
it's
see.
Almost, it's like it's not around, really, in many ways.
Okay, one more time.
Okay.
Here we go.
You go first.
Our gaze is close.
Our gaze is close. Faded out because it takes too long. How many times does that go?
That was okay. So
yeah,
hopefully it's
good,
either
huh?
recorded.
Six,
you can
six, seven,
put
six,
it in there somehow.
And eight, it's four, 84. It would take 84 times to get through.
That's
okay.
Right.
All right. Gene Rosenthal is our guest. And we're our own guest here. We did a spectacular job of not reading that very well. where are you headed from here? What's the next step?
Wow. Well, I think we're driving back. I think the next step will just be to continue with what I'm calling maybe just the research experiments or something like that, and to continue with that as I'm working towards more performances and more interactions with musicians of my generation, which I haven't had so much, and many more.
Are you still in the Boston burbs?
I am in the wild of Western Massachusetts.
I'll be at Hersky.
Somewhere around there, but they're way over on the other side of town.
Ooh. And if you had a question we should have asked you, what would it be, and what would your answer be?
That would have been
something to do with toast.
No, it would have been
wrong.
How long would it take for you to answer a question about that question?
Existential.
And we are not going to ask you.
Not at all.
Not at all. Instead, we're going to play.
I'm still very much alive. Rosencrantz and was it?
Not Rosenthal.
I don't know. No idea.
So Your Fine Promises, we're going to wrap up with. This is a lovely, very short, but lovely piece.
I could note, and this is a little bit of sort of an historical history, well, whatever. To this piece, there was Joan LaBarbera sings on this piece, and I was a graduate student when it was recorded at CalArts, and she did just an extraordinary job of singing it.
And it foreshadows your future work, in fact, in tone and character.
Great, I'm all for that.
Okay.
I think that is just the best, and I'm still with it.
Dean Rosenthal, thank you so much for joining us on Calvos and Damien.
In the house.
Da-dum. Okay.
Is that a round as well?
That was that round. Sorry.
Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sure.
Thanks for having me.